Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing well. Getting ready for March Madness. It's the first day of March. What do you do on the first day of March? Do you change your routine? Do you change your wardrobe? What do you do?
I don't do anything.
You don't get ready for basketball?
No. I didn't know that we were supposed to be doing anything.
You don't start wearing green or something?
This is all news to me.
Well, I arranged to have an Irish guy on the program, so a little bit later in the segment today, we're going to have an Irish guy. So
excellent
I made that
job.
Happen for you. So yesterday was fun, right? Going downtown and seeing that's a neat facility down there. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, we really enjoy the folks down at 200 Peachtree and 200 Office where we have a studio, and it looks great. It looks absolutely wonderful down there, and I can't wait to do more things out of there.
Well, the studio looks a lot better than ours, but I think it's because we have Elizabeth Gordon and Dana Barrett who are running that operation down there, and it is just it's put together so much better. I think they have the flat screen television, they've got the red shelves and the books and the whole bit.
They have a better designer eye than we do.
I think maybe so. So this is going to be a fun segment. It is the entire show is dedicated to nominees for Atlanta's Best Connector. If you would give our listeners a little background on how this thing came about, because we sort of tripped over it, right?
Right. Periodically we do kind of specials on a variety of verticals. Like we've had a PR special, and we've had a social media special, and all kinds of narrow.
We got a beer
edition,
special coming
beer,
up in Alpharetta.
Microbrewery special. And so we said, hey, let's do a connector special. So we expected, a handful of people reply to that, but we had probably close to 100 nominees. So it was kind of overwhelming. So we've been running this now for several weeks.
And so now we have the top three. Is that where we are?
We can tell them that.
So it is my distinct pleasure to introduce to you this morning on Atlanta Business Radio one of those nominees. He is the president with a firm called I-5 Alliances, LLC, Mr. Paul Terlemezian. Welcome, man.
Well, welcome, and thank you. You pronounced that beautifully, and for your audience to let you know that I am not Irish, but in 16 days, I'm going to do my best imitation of being Irish.
That's great. So I-5 Alliances, what is that business all about?
It's about connecting, but connecting businesses, business-to-business connection. So my business is similar to being a retained recruiter, but instead of recruiting people to work for companies, I recruit companies to work with companies.
And so how does that work in real life?
Real life, it's a challenge to help other companies understand why might they want to be involved with another company. We're so used to going out there and finding our own business that we don't think about how we might help somebody else find business as well, and why is that good for us. So 90% of my time, I'm out there talking to people about their businesses, learning about what they do, and how I can help them be even more effective if they were to partner with another business.
Now, is the motive in your experience more about our ability to reach the market, or is it more about our ability to execute on what we're already selling?
Great. It's more about what you're already selling. It's providing more value to your existing customers. I'm influenced by lots of books that I've read over the years. Michael Gerber's book, E-Myth Revisited, he talks about an immature company, an adolescent company, and a mature company. A mature company is totally focused on the value it provides for its customers.
So now, how do you, you have a company and they're doing whatever, they sell widgets.
Yes.
And so you're going to that widget company and go, you know what, this company could use some widgets or?
Yeah, not quite. It's going to that widget company. Again, 90% of my time I'm looking for partners to partner with my clients. So
right.
I'm going to that widget company and I'm studying them and I'm pretending like I would be their customer. And I'm thinking, what else do I need that you aren't giving me? And what might your competitors be giving me that you're not giving me? And what do I need to do on my own after you give me what you give me so that I really get the value? And therefore, if I'm thinking of those things, now I can go to the widget company and say, if you did widgets and blidgets, your clients wouldn't have to go buy blidgets on their own. And they might want to do more business with you because they can get widgets and blidgets. Or if your widgets came in green as well as purple, you'd sell more of those. So how do you provide more value to your customers? How are you more mature in terms of how you provide value to your customers? That's the real selling point. And the big companies want to do that themselves. The small companies like to do it. The medium-sized companies realize that they can't do it as fast. So maybe by partnering with somebody else who already does that, they can bring more value.
And you're like a matchmaker?
A matchmaker, exactly. Yenta. Many years ago, I played the rabbi and fiddler on the roof.
Come full circle.
I've come full circle.
So what was the impetus? Surely you had a real job before you started doing it?
Yeah, actually, I had a real job for a long time. But this is a real job, man. I mean, come on, you know.
Well, he is wearing a tie for our listening audience. Yeah, he's the only guy in the studio with a
hopefully,
tie.
Hopefully it's not too bright. But I had a real job for a long time, big corporations. And I saw big corporations making big money and winning big deals through alliances. And then in the early part of this millennium, I went to work. I mean, most of my work is in the training industry. I went to work for three different e-learning companies. In three Junes in a row, I got laid off from those companies along with the entire sales force. And my wife very lovingly looked at me and said, "What's the common denominator here?" And I said, "Yeah, it's this nose. This nose is, you know, that I'm attached to getting me into trouble." Three Junes in a row getting laid off. I said, "I'm going to start my own business." That afternoon of the third layoff, went out to talk to some clients that I thought would be skeptical about my approach. And three of the four hired me in the first month. And I said, "Well, I guess I'm doing a lousy job of finding skeptics, or I've got an idea that's got some legs to it." And that was in June 30th of 2003. So
Do you get paid just like on a retainer, or do you get paid for performance? How does that work?
Well, I'm going to have to charge you for that answer. But the reality is I do get a retainer. Mm-hmm. Because I found that before I was asking for a retainer, and I said I would just do this and then get paid in the back end, guess what? Everybody said yes. And then when I called them with an opportunity, what do you really do? You know, they never really thought about what I was doing because it was free.
Right.
So by putting a retainer in place, they're serious. But more importantly than that, when I call somebody and say, "I have been retained to find a widget maker to partner with the widget maker," they know that company that I'm calling, that if they say no to me, I'm going to go to their competitor. Because I'm retained, they know I'm serious. So it's elevated my game as well as, you know, keeping me paid. So it really makes sure that the buyer and the partner are both serious.
So 2003, a lot surely has changed in the past 10 years, and you must anticipate some interesting changes in the next 10 years. Tell us a little bit about that landscape.
Well, you know, clearly, you know, technology can't ignore that. If I look at my core, it's about alliances. How do I put business together? I focus on the training industry, and then I bring in technologies to that. So clearly, you know, this kind of technology that's allowing us to be on a radio show, social media, you know, 6-7 years ago was what the heck is that, right? And it's like, now I can't live without it. And I think from a connector's perspective, powerful tool. And I think where it's going, two key directions for the future with which technology is going to change in terms of what we do. One is that the connections are going to more find us. You know, we're used to, you know, finding people, connecting people. Technology is going to recommend to us who we should be connected to. Okay, that's already starting to happen. And then another thing, about a year ago, I went to a session at Georgia Tech on computational journalism, whatever the heck that means. But basically what it said is, journalism has a problem in that you're supposed to validate your references before you publish your news. Well, the challenge with that is by the time you validate your references, the news is old.
It's not news anymore.
It's not in the news anymore. So they were looking at how can the news as it arrives to us be validated along the way. So, and basically it says each of us is going to have a reputation. How good is the information we pass on to others? We're going to have a little reputation halo or not. Maybe it'll be horns, but there'll be something that will be visible around us that will say, "This is your reputation." And that reputation will be validated by how good the information is I provide to others, but also with the people who evaluate me, how good are they at evaluating? So the technology is going to emerge that it's going to be, you know, everything we do is going to be tracked by technology, and that's going to impact our reputation. So it's going to say, "You better be authentic." So that's where I see those two things happening.
So you think that authenticity is the most important thing a connector can do, or is that the thing they're judged by most?
Authenticity and transparency. You know, be authentic and let people know who you really are. Don't try to pretend. Don't try to pretend to be something you're not. People will find you out, and then you've ruined everything you've built. So be authentic, be transparent, be real, and good things will happen.
I know a lot of my listeners think I'm 6'2" and broad-shouldered, but
he is. There goes my reputation ranking, right?
You're evaluating. So, 10 years at this, are people finding you? How do you go to market?
Yeah, exactly. You know what? I at the beginning, I had to obviously work hard at it. But 3 weeks ago, I got found by somebody in Spain that went into a browser, went training and alliances, and guess whose nose popped up? Mine. They go and they check me out through LinkedIn, go to my links there, found my Ning site, started to, and then posted a comment on my Ning site. I was able to respond to that, and that came in. Others through referrals. I need to work harder at working harder because things are coming to me so easily. And the reason I need to work harder at working harder is because that's the value I bring to my clients. They have to know what's new, how do you work hard to get that. And whatever you're good at and becomes easy, then it becomes commonplace, so you got to look to the next thing. But probably for the last 2 years, all my clients have found me, but I'm wanting to work harder to find new ones.
Now, you mentioned the word alliances. Do you call these kind of connections creating alliances?
Yeah, actually, by the way, I'm a math major, so I'm real analytical, not really social. I'm analytical. And there's actually 16 different types of alliances.
Oh, my.
Anywhere. Yeah, see, there's a math major,
oh,
right?
Oh, you have like a mnemonic or something to help us keep up with it?
No, unfortunately, I can't think. Other than my name, I can't think of anything that's got 16 letters in it. Okay, but it's from the simplest example of an alliance is a simple lead source. Will somebody refer you and give you a lead? That's the most simple form of an alliance. The most complex is an acquisition. You go out and you buy a company. That's a really formal alliance. You've got to have lawyers and lots of money to do something like that, and then a full range in between. So part of my analysis says to my clients, what's the best type of alliance for you based on your criteria of growing your revenues, getting more awareness, plus how much do you, can you spend, and how much control do you need to have? And those same four questions are questions as I look at the partner. And if I can make a match between what they want from a business perspective, then I can start looking at what they actually do. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of what they actually do, but also how do the businesses fit together.
So two thoughts on this Spain thing. is when you get back, I wish you would bring us some Spanish olives. For people that have ever had Spanish olives from Spain, oh, my gracious. So I'm going to ask you to do that for us. I understand if you ask somebody a favor, that's one way to connect, right?
It's a beautiful way to connect. Let somebody else do a favor for you is a great great connecting point. So
right. Second thing on the Spain deal, I mean, that's exciting, but it makes me wonder if this whole connecting thing can't pretty quickly get away from you. Isn't there some sort of practical limit as to how effective you can be a number of connections?
Ask Facebook. Okay, I mean, the point is, if, and then you made a keyword, if I'm trying to control it, if I'm trying to be on top of it all, it'd drive me crazy. But if I say, I want to be a great connector in the training world and have that be recognized as just the way things people do, if I can let it go and let it fly on its own, more than enough business will come to me. The challenge, I think the 20th century way of thinking was I had to control everything and dominate everything, as everything was about me. 21st century says, let it go. Be free with it. If everybody in the world thought connections were a great thing in the training industry, they'd be chasing me down because I was doing it for the longest time. If I try to keep it and control it and make it just all mine, it's going to be some quirky guy in Atlanta that thinks he knows something about alliances.
Now, how much of your time do you spend kind of creating these alliances and connections, and how much of your time do you spend training other people on how to create alliances and connections?
Good question. Probably 95% is spent building these connections, working these connections, looking for these connections.
On someone else's behalf.
On retainer from somebody else to build alliances for them.
Right.
Okay, I have alliances for myself, so I use alliances for my own business to grow my business. And recently I've been approached by three different people that would like to mimic what I do into other industries. And so one of them has gotten real serious, so I am spending some time training that individual, but also looking how I can, you know, I'm going to focus on the training industry. This individual is interested in focusing on the health IT industry, so we can collaborate, but we're not competing. So I'm spending some time training that individual, but that's to be an affiliate with me. I'm not a training company. I'm a consulting execution company that builds alliances for others. So all my time is spent doing that, and my own clients sometimes come as a byproduct of that.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about Georgia Learns.
Oh, thank you. One of the things I've been fond of saying for years is that learning is the second largest component of our global economy. And people say, really? And I say, well, I'm fond of saying it. not sure if it's really true. And it also gives room to whoever I'm talking to. I mean, we all know that the radio industry is really the largest segment of our global economy.
Of course.
So if I'm talking to somebody else, they can be. But since then, I've discovered that, in fact, in the state of Georgia, the number one expenditure for the state of Georgia is education. 24% of the state budget goes into education. So it is the number one expenditure in the state of Georgia. Then I went and I found some Department of Labor statistics that said that the number one area of employment is food service. The number two is education. The second area, and there are in fact six times as many people making a living in education as there are attorneys. We know how many, there's a lot of attorneys running around, right? Yeah. Okay, so what Georgia Lawrence was about was to say in 2008 when the economy went bad, we said, what's going on here? You know, where are we going to get new jobs? Where's this economy going to come back from? And I said, learning. Learning is the most, it's so critically important to us. We can stay in the house we have, we can stay in the car we have, but if I told you you had to freeze your knowledge and you couldn't learn anything new for the rest of your career, I might as well have given you a death sentence.
I know that guy. We won't call his name on air, but I know this guy. He's done learning.
Okay.
No, I've met him.
Yeah, Jackie, you're probably the only one who knows him. So basically, Georgia Learns is about a consortium, a grassroots consortium. We launched it in October, 50 executives from technology companies, learning companies, nonprofits that all want to make a difference to Georgia's reputation. Our state has a terrible reputation for education, K-12 education. We're near the bottom. We hear about cheating scandals. And yet there's some wonderful things going on in the state. So these executives are coming together to say, what can we do to elevate and promote and showcase the great things we're doing? And then the second component is that Georgia is the only state in the country that doesn't allow for teacher retirement funds to be invested in alternative investments. So in times of economic development, 49 states, the governor can say, we will invest in these companies through the teacher retirement fund to help these companies grow and stay in their state and be more powerful. So about a year ago, I went to some legislators and I said, you know, I understand that we're the only state that's not doing that. What if those investments were focused on learning? What if those investments help the teacher's job be better during the day and also were a good investment? We're in companies that were making a profit. And they said, well, nobody's thought of that. 2012 is an election year. Nobody wants to touch that topic in an election year, but come back to us in 2013. So in 2012, we are bringing together, and I've got a lunch meeting today with a group that's excited about this, different groups within Georgia that are having global impact on learning. So the idea is that within a year, Georgia Learns will have a reputation that the Georgia is where you go when you want to understand what the innovations are for learning.
Oh, what rewarding work that has to be.
It's been phenomenal. So basically, to your early point, I've taken my alliance work and turned it inside out and giving it away to free to be able to create more interest around it, and it's done phenomenal things.
That's terrific.
Thank you.
How can our listeners connect with you and learn more about Georgia Learns and about your work at I-5 Alliances?
Yeah, well, great. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm not the only Turlemazian. I'm not the only Paul Turlemazian. There's another guy running around Las Vegas
really?
With the name Paul Turlemazian. I keep on trying to tell my wife that's the other Paul Turlemazian out there. And my email, pault, P-A-U-L-T, at i5alliances.com. And phone number, 404-252-8330. And connect with me if you think you can help my clients or if you think your clients need help as well. Thanks so much.
Yes, sir. And thanks so much for coming down and visiting with us.
This
has been
pleasure.
A very informative conversation. Hey, how about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
That'd be great fun.
Terrific. Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio is Miss Bonnie Buell Russick with BBR Marketing. Welcome to the show, Bonnie.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you and actually have you back. You're no stranger to the Business Radio X studios, right?
I've been on here a couple times. Yeah, it's fun.
But you're with us today as a nominee for Atlanta's Best Connector. That's got to feel good. What does that feel like?
I know. I was kind of, I have to say, I was honored and a little bit surprised by that. But, you know, I guess it is something that I do quite frequently and enjoy.
So when you're out connecting, is it face-to-face mostly for you? Is it more through social media? Or are you blending all of these different platforms? How's it actually happening day-to-day for you?
I think it's a little bit of everything. And in part, I am frequently out meeting with people and networking. When I started my company, I made a goal of 3 networking meetings a week.
Wow.
And have kept that for 2.5 years. I don't think there's many weeks where I haven't done something. Now, that might be, you know, sitting down with somebody for a cup of coffee. That might be going to one of those little, you know, networking hour, happy hour things where everybody walks around nervous with a glass of wine, you know. But Yeah, and that has really kind of, in some ways, I attribute the growth of my company to that, and it's given me the opportunity to meet a lot of people that I can then connect with each other.
So I got to ask this, because I am like a fish out of water at these things. How do you work a room productively? And get something done. Is there like a 5-step process that you come in the door, everybody goes, "Oh, Bonnie's here," and then you work it from there.
Only, you know, I think everybody hates those. I mean, I have to say, I've done a lot of them, but I still hate walking in the room and when you don't know anybody. There is that awkward moment where we all feel like the wallflower in junior high, and nobody's going to ask us to dance. But I have learned that one of the best tricks is to walk up to the first person you see standing there by themselves, because they are feeling the same nervousness and stress and everything. And you suddenly, have a connection in the room and you have an ally. And then just, meet as many people. I mean, it's all about conversation most of the time. There's very little business going to happen at these networking events. It's just really about meeting people,
so
I think.
So it's a whole different set of expectations you have.
I do, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to, eventually it may turn into some business, but nothing's going to transact at that meeting necessarily.
Now, as I understand it, you've grown your business more than 50% a year. What is your business and how in the world are you growing it that fast?
I've been pretty fortunate. My business is BBR Marketing, and we do marketing for professional services firms and individuals. So all of our clients are accountants, attorneys, engineers, consultants of various walks of life. And one of the reasons why I started this firm is, prior to this, I was the marketing director for an accounting firm, and I had a hard time finding vendors that understood how to market professional services versus a product or something you could touch and feel.
So there are some real differences.
I think there are a lot of differences.
Well, let's come back and explore that in a minute.
Okay, we'll talk about that. What I started in August of 2009, which was probably about the craziest time to start a company, but in some ways the economic downturn worked in my favor, because accountants and attorneys are not known for their marketing expenditures or skills necessarily most of the time. But what had happened, for the first time in many, many, many years, they saw either a flat revenues or a dip in revenue, and suddenly hit a panic. And, referrals was not bringing in the 10 to 15% growth that they had seen for the last 10, 15 years. So suddenly they were like, wait a minute, maybe we need to make some changes here. And I was, somebody that came into the market with some knowledge about it. I'd worked in the industry before, and I was cheaper than a lot of the big marketing firms out there. So it kind of worked in my favor. So we were able to, add clients and grow at a really nice clip.
So I want to hear more about your perspective on the differences associated with effectively marketing tangible products versus services. I personally am of the opinion that I would starve to death if I had to sell like a washing machine or a car. I feel like I can go sell it and then I can go back home and make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, let's hear your perspective on that.
I think one of the biggest challenges is you're really, what you're buying is the knowledge in somebody's head. You think about it, you're buying trust. If you go to somebody to get your taxes done, you are trusting that that person is not going to do a shoddy job of it and you wind up in jail. But communicating that in a way that's not like, trust me, where it sounds all sleazy and gross, is actually hard. And, it has to be done in a way that, combines a lot of things. Social media has been really good, I think, because it kind of allows that two-way communication rather than just one. You're not going to necessarily... There's a type of attorney that advertises on billboards, but most of the ones that I work with are not. You're not going to have big billboard ads.
There goes that sponsorship.
Sorry.
At least we still have the yellow pages.
Oh, there you go. it's a multi-targeted approach. It's communicating. People want to get to know the people they're working with, so it's really not necessarily selling the product. It's selling the person that's delivering the product a lot of the times.
Now, when you're making a referral, because I would imagine that's part of how you're marketing, is you're kind of referring other people to people you know within your network. Is that part of your?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
How you serve your clients? How quick are you to make a referral? Like as soon as you know somebody, like say you're at this networking, function that you mentioned earlier, do you go, hey, I know an attorney? Like, how well do you have to know him before you're referring him?
You know, I typically like to get to know somebody a little bit more than just the, you know, here's my business card kind of exchange. Because, you know, I want people to have trust in the referrals that I'm giving.
Right.
So, you know, I'll usually kind of try and sit down with somebody, have a cup of coffee, at least have a phone conversation. Like Paul, I'm connecting with them on LinkedIn to see who else they're connected with and what kind of recommendations they have.
So you know Paul before, or you never met Paul before?
Oddly enough, Paul and I have actually done a little work together, and we did not realize that till we got in here. So
you'd feel comfortable referring Paul?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But have you ever gotten that LinkedIn note on Tuesday that I'd like to connect with you, and then on Wednesday I'd like for you to give me an endorsement, and then on Thursday can you refer me?
Oh, yes, yes. Or, you know, and I got to say, I do a lot of LinkedIn training as part of my job. And I tell everybody out there, never, ever, ever, when you're trying to connect to somebody, use that, you know, standard sentence or two that's in there, because a lot of times people are connecting with me and everybody else, and I don't remember meeting you, or I don't know quite who you are. And, you know, just putting on there, hey, it was great meeting you Tuesday night at the such and so event, I'd like to connect to you on LinkedIn, I'm absolutely going to connect to you 100% of the time. Some random person who claims to be a friend and is trying to connect and I don't know who you are, you know, I think that in some ways puts people off. And, you know, it's kind of like when you're at the networking event and somebody walks up and just shoves a business card in your face and said, call me, you know, and then walks off to the next person. It's just, you know, it's not the way things should be done.
Now, how do you, like when you're kind of in these functions, how do you tell who the good people are? Do you do any research beforehand? Do you kind of get a feel for this event? Like if you're going to an event, you're like, okay, I know this person's going to be there and I'm going to try to meet these three people. Do you have any kind of strategy like that? Or are you just kind of taking each event as they come and, you know, just seeing who's there kind of as fate would have it?
I think most of the time I don't do a huge amount of research necessarily, but usually I'm either going with somebody or I know somebody that's going to happen to be there. I actually, when I started the company, I had a lot more time on my hands to do a lot of these events. And now we're really busy, so there's not quite as much time going on. And I also think you have to narrow down. I mean, you could spend all day, every day networking and going to these events and you'd get nothing done and make no money. So, you know, finding the ones that really seem to be, you know, the best for your particular business is important. And then kind of sticking with those and even getting involved in those organizations.
So you kind of get, at first when you started, you had a broad brush and then you're now narrowing it down to these kind of pockets that you're focusing in. And then you're saying to dive deep within those pockets and then take leadership positions and then just kind of immerse yourself in there rather than go to 50. Now you're going to 5, but you're all in on those 5.
Absolutely. I think that's important. Now you probably have to go to the 50 or 20 or so to figure out who they are.
Right.
Yeah. And I think one of the mistakes a lot of people make, and this is true, especially for, you know, professional services firms and accountants in particular, is they tend to go to associations where there are lots of other accountants in the room because that's where they feel comfortable. But the thing is, they're not going to get any business out of that. You know, right. If you're really looking to grow your business, you need to go where your clients are going to be. You know, for me, that is some of these accounting organizations because, you know, 40% of my clients are CPA firms.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not hanging out with lots of other marketing
people. So you counsel your accountant clients to go to the industry associations rather than the accounting.
Right. Yeah.
That's great advice. I think and Paul, he'll identify with this. I can remember being a commission-based salesperson for a training company. And we had to be very careful about the trade shows that we decided we would invest the money to get on the plane and go to and work. We didn't go to the training trade shows. We went to the tool show because we had a good reputation for training people in the tool business. Right, Paul?
No doubt. And not to take another sponsor away, but the show you were at a couple of weeks ago, there were about somewhere between 80 and 90 vendors there, and that was a training show. 10 years ago, there were 800 vendors at that show.
Oh, wow.
Now, those vendors, and there's more training vendors today than there were 10 years ago. They're going to those industry shows. Mm-hmm. So, underline Japan.
Right, right. So, Bonnie, I got to ask, where do you stand on this commission referral fee thing? If you make an introduction, if you get some folks connecting, Are you expecting a commission referral fee? Is it structured, or would a beer some Friday afternoon be good enough compensation? Mm-hmm. What's your take on that?
I'm kind of all about the beer on Friday afternoon, whether I've referred somebody or not. I would say 9 times out of 10, or even 9.5 times out of 10, I think it's one of those sort of things that comes back to you eventually. You know, I work with natural referral sources. You know, I got CPAs and attorneys. They love meeting each other, and they work together all the time, so I'm able to make those connections. Well, when they, you know, find somebody that needs some marketing help, they're going to refer them to me. I do have a couple of, you know, official kind of formal commission sort of relationships in place, but those are with people that have, you know, asked for that specifically, and, you know, one of them is with an association of accounting firms. That was kind of a nice hookup there for me.
Right.
So, you know, I'm more than happy, certainly, to, you know, give a commission to somebody if that's what they need or what they want. It, because, frankly, it's a lot cheaper than, you know, paying a salesperson if somebody else is out there doing it for you. But I got to say, most of the time, it's just really more of a kind of establishing a relationship and what goes around comes around sort of thing.
Right. When you're working with like an accountant and a lawyer, when they refer to each other, there's no referral fee, right? Isn't that just kind of, that's just the natural?
No, that's just people meeting, you know, introducing people who can hopefully work together. And,
right.
You know,
there's no expectation of that, right?
No, none at all.
So is there a rock star connection, like one that really stands out for you that you look back over the years and say, man, that's one of my most successful connections?
You know, I was thinking about that, and most of them are just small little connections where, you know, I have an employment attorney that I introduced to an HR consultant, and the two of them are kind of growing their businesses separately, but they're able to collaborate on a lot and have really, you know, gotten much more business out of the relationship and are able to send things back and forth to each other. You know, there's lots of small relationships like that. I wish there was some huge one where somebody was like, you know, I was on Oprah because of what Bonnie did.
Right.
But, you know, most of the time, you know, we're all in small businesses, and day to day, it's like, you know, I introduce a new business owner to somebody that can take care of their insurance. You know, that solves a need, and that makes me happy.
Right. I think that's what it is for most people, but I think in most people's heads, they think there's some golden ticket out there that's going to solve all,
right,
you know, that big magic connector that's hooking you up and changing your life. I think that's a myth.
Yeah, I think so too.
So if the people in this room could help you get connected with a certain individual or help you get a little better wired in a certain industry or association, do you have your eye on a prize that you are trying to make a little bit more inroads into?
Yeah, we're really targeting those, you know, small to mid-sized accounting, law firms, engineering firms. That I think one of the places where we really shine as a company is when we serve as the outsourced marketing department for them. Because a lot of time, I got to tell you, accounting and law firms are not quick to hire non-billable employees. So a lot of times it takes, you know, they get up to 60, 70 people before they have a marketing person on staff. So there's a lot of opportunity to kind of outsource that, and that's a hole that we're really trying to fill a lot. So, yeah, we're taking introductions, and I'll return the favor.
Well, I tell you what speaks to the caliber of the people in the studio this morning, and that these are people that really do walk their talk. The audio matches the video. The other two gentlemen in the studio, as you're describing what you're looking for, they're genuinely taking notes, and their wheels are turning trying to figure out how to help you.
I know. I love it.
So how can our listeners get in touch with you, Bonnie?
Our website is bbrmarketing.com, and you can email me directly at bonnie@bbrmarketing.com. And if you want, we just launched a brand new blog site last week, specifically for CPAs, but it's marketingideasforcpas.com.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you back in the studio. I hope you'll come back sometime, and I don't know, maybe bring a delighted client. That might be fun.
Hey, I'd love to.
Yeah, good stuff. Hey, how about hanging out with us? We got one more guest we're going to visit with this morning.
Absolutely.
Terrific. Next up, and our closer today, Lee, on Atlanta Business Radio, is a gentleman with a little different Southern accent than you and I have. He is with an outfit called Dynami. And his name is Kenneth Jones. Welcome to the show, man.
Good morning. Nice to be here this morning.
Well, we are delighted to have you. First things first, did we say Dynami right?
You did indeed. It's a Greek word, being typical Irish, I guess, we were sitting around trying to think of a name, and it's a Greek word that means strength, and I think it was on the third bottle of wine that we came up with the name. So
what kind of work do you guys do out there? What kind of problem are you trying to solve for folks?
Well, we're a meeting production company, so we specialize, we work with corporations predominantly, assisting them with their creative needs when it comes to internal messaging. So you're having a user conference, product launch, national sales meeting, global sales meeting. We come in, we assist your communications department, marketing department on all of the creative aspects, so theme development, content development, speech writing, video creation, and then obviously executing it through audiovisual, staging, lighting, sound.
So for, like, can you give us an example?
We just finished a global sales meeting for Citrix Online, which is an online meeting tool, which is GoToMeeting, GoToPC.
So they do a real life?
They do a real life. But we
That's a little weird, right?
Well, no. You cannot
help, obviously.
Well, you can't beat the face-to-face, but we did integrate an awful lot of their actual demos on site.
That was not the conference theme. You can't
no.
beat face-to-face.
No, definitely not. Not at all. But that was a project we just completed back in Santa Barbara back in January for about 550 folks who came in from all over the world, and it was about 5 days of general sessions, lots of breakout meetings, lot of technology, a lot of using their own technology to integrate into the program itself. So that's a typical size of program for us.
So what brought you on this side of the pond? Were you doing this kind of work in Ireland? And what were the first few months like when you got here, man?
Oh, that was, don't take me back to those days. That was a while ago. I had a lot less gray hair. But I was in the hotel business. I grew up in the southwest of Ireland in a very much a small town, about 500 people, farming community. Could not wait to get out. And I think back then in kind of the early 80s, the economy was obviously very, very poor in Ireland, and a lot of people were moving predominantly to the UK, the United States, Australia. So the green card was a little difficult to acquire back then. So being a good Irish boy, I moved to London and spent about 5 years trying to get my green card every year, and finally got it. Nearly moved to Australia, mind you, but thanks for, my mother was very thankful that I decided to go only halfway around the world. So arrived and actually decided on Atlanta. Had never been. I didn't tell my mother that. Didn't have a job. Didn't know anybody. And arrived on Labor Day weekend. Didn't realize it was Labor Day weekend, so everything was shut.
And you're like, America's closed.
America was closed, and everything was Peachtree Street, so I got completely confused trying to find a Social Security office. And the rest is history. You know, it was a struggle at the start, but I'm a positive guy. And the first probably 6 months, I didn't know anybody, so I just made lots and lots of friends, and kind of grew from there, and we'll talk about the schmooze a little later. It kind of came out of that original not knowing anybody, but I guess it was just a tough, hard slog, but here I am, you know, 16 years later, and it's been a lot of fun.
So does the Irish background, the accent, the story, do you feel like that you've been able to capitalize on that as an asset, or is it a hindrance in some ways?
Definitely not a hindrance. My accent has definitely disappeared, I think, over the last number of years. My brother lives in Philadelphia, and he sounds like he just got off the boat. but I would say that it's certainly been a positive.
But you bring it back when you need to, right?
I'm now married with two young kids, so those days are done. But
excuse me. But when you get with your brother, I know, like, when I go down to Pensacola, I kind of start talking like this when I get back, because that's how everybody talks down there.
Yes, when I go home, which is quite frequent, they definitely know that I'm not Irish anymore. But over here, I can definitely, from a business perspective, I think if you're leaving a message for somebody, I would say that your message will probably stand out, and I probably do speak a little bit more Irish when I leave a message for someone to call me back.
So tell us about this funny Irish word, schmooze.
Schmooze is not a word I came up with.
It's an Irish word?
No. Well, it was a word that I think it just, this networking event that I started many, many years ago kind of created itself. The very first one was at Mumbo Jumbo, which is obviously not in existence anymore. But it was my way of getting to meet people. I didn't know anybody, so I said, well, alcohol and a bar, obviously, we'll meet some people. I invited the people that I knew. I think there were six people at the very, very first one. And it kind of grew from there. That was back in the day where, you know, you didn't have social media, you didn't have email, and we basically just kind of faxed to the next one and said, well, meet next month at this location. And it kind of took off and grew over the years. And we still do it. It's once a month. It's normally the third Thursday of every month. It's an evening event. There's no cost. It's not a club. It's not a, you know, we actually don't wear name tags, believe it or not. Band name tags. I think it's just for the purposes of what we do it for and making introductions, people feel much more comfortable in coming because their name tag doesn't show that they're from Equifax or from Microsoft.
So they're not like a target.
Exactly, exactly. So we do, over the years, we've had very positive feedback. And, you know, per the last conversation in working a room, I mean, you know, you're correct in terms of people are nervous. They don't know how to make connections. You get the folks that are, you know, come in, they have the business cards flying. And, you know, it's just not the way that we want to run our little group. And it keeps people coming back because it's a very low-key, more of a social setting. People have gotten married from it. People have had great business relationships from it. I have found business from it. And, you know, that's really the intent of it, is to connect people, not for our benefit as a company, although it does that, certainly. But it was really started in the last few years where the economy's obviously been very difficult on the event marketing world. It became a predominantly people who were unemployed coming to see if there were any opportunities for either freelance work, contractual work, or for full-time employment. So it's kind of filled all of those voids the last couple of years.
Now, do you have a set of specific disciplines, some do's or don'ts that you exercise either before, during, or after a networking event or an opportunity to connect with people?
Great question. I will say that the biggest faux pas I see is the non-follow-up. I mean, if you give a business card to someone, it's a business opportunity. It may be today, it may be tomorrow, it could be 20 years from now because of LinkedIn and every other way. But I would say that if I get 10 business cards at a networking event, my way of doing it is I email every single person. I say, it was nice to meet you. It's a personal email. The very next morning, it's kind of just something that I've done for years. I'll probably hear from two of them, which is very, very sad. Maybe I'm, you know, not a person they want to meet, but I just think it's sad. I think it's just, you know, I will rarely, if I'm traveling a week and maybe I've been to a networking event or I've met somebody, if I may have met five people, I'll probably get one. Someone will hit me up one time before the other four, and they'll never come. I mean, it's just very sad. So I see salespeople all the time. They're out there, they're working for their organization. And for some, you know, unknown reason to me, there's no follow-up. So that's disappointing.
Well, I'll tell you, within 48 hours of this show, my nephew will be calling you to sell you some long distance. That's why I collected two cards from everybody. So we do follow up here.
Perfect. Good. Good to hear.
So I want to hear about your outreach work, because you're very involved in outreach with younger people and you're climbing big mountains. Tell us what you got going on, man.
Well, from an outreach perspective, it's all about giving back. I take that back to when I first moved here. I didn't know anybody. People were good to me, and I kind of live by the same rule in terms of trying to help anyone that's young and trying to move into either our business or other businesses. Back about 5 years ago, I was the president of the Georgia chapter of Meeting Professionals International, and they have about 1,000 members. It's a very active association that's part of an international association, and we had strong mentoring programs there. And, you know, it's a perspective for me that what goes around comes around. You know, I've had people that we've allowed work out of our office that are unemployed, that just need a place to come, to feel professional. There's a phone there, there's wireless internet, there's a coffee machine, there's a fax machine.
We might set up in your shop.
There you go.
Would that be
more than welcome. More than welcome. We have lovely offices.
We'll be producing from Kenneth's office from now going forward.
But that's work for everybody, where, you know, we kind of have a very open plan office down at King Plow, and we have a number of people who do not work directly for us, but one person's a writer, one person is a video producer. and they have started to do business for one another and for one another's clients. So you can see the benefit from that. And we've also seen that the writer has brought us in to work on a project and vice versa. So it's a little incubator space that we very much enjoy.
So what's next for you guys at Dynami? What do you got your eyes on?
You know, we're always trying to grow our business. I think much like everyone has said, 2008 was kind of the downhill spiral for the event marketing world. You know, meeting was a no-no. Don't travel. Don't spend your budgets. Banks that took TARP money that were clients of ours stopped doing meetings, haven't done incentive programs. You all saw the ING or the EIG effect in terms of, you know, spending this to go here. So it's coming back slowly. Last year was a decent year. This year looks rather good. You know, it can change on a dime, as we all know. So for us, it's more growth in terms of looking at those organizations that we work with that are the perfect match for our type of business and our creativity. You know, it's an exciting time.
Now, is your business focused more on like creating educational and internal events for a company, or is it helping a company show at a trade show or conference or something like that?
Less of a trade show. We're normally engaged by a corporation for either an internal meeting, or they may have a user group meeting where they bring their users in.
Right.
And we work all over the world. Pretty much about 95% of our business is actually outside Atlanta, and probably about 30% of our business is outside the continental USA. So it's kind of a hybrid of both. But over the last few years, we've adapted. I mean, we don't do social events like weddings or anything of that nature, obviously. But it's anything that there's a message and some creativity needs to be given to, or any sub-part of that where somebody just wants to create a video, we will do that.
So how can our listeners get in touch with you and learn more about your work?
Our website is www.dynamigroup.com, and our telephone number is 404-875-2653.
Great. Well, that wraps up another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. For Stone Payton, I am Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time.